We've now going to hand over to yourself immediately, Minister, to run this as you see fit, bring the people, do things of your staff and so on. Over to you, Minister Davey.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, I understand that after the presentation of the annual performance plan, there will be a discussion, or at least an opportunity for members to respond to the presentation last week on the iPad. That being the case, I'm not going to say anything in my introduction on the iPad, except to say that it does remain the flagship program of the department, and that this year we've introduced into the iPad a number of new features, as you are aware, making it much more user-friendly in the document so people can see it more easily. But also, since this is the last IHAP that covers a full financial year before the end of this administration, we have reflected on what we think has been achieved in the IHAP and also on some of the challenges that we think are needing to embrace as we move further forward with strengthening the industrial economy. But we can come back to that. And I see that there are some views from some of the members that have been issuing various statements over the last few days, and I'd be very happy to have a robust engagement on some of those matters later on. So I'm going to leave that and say that I sort of focus on really on two aspects in my introduction. The first would be on the trade policy matters. And I want to just highlight to the portfolio committee that there are several trade negotiations that are expected to come to some kind of conclusion in the course of this financial year. And I think that it's important that the committee is aware of that. So let me mention just a few of them. One of them is, which is our flagship, most important trade negotiation, is the SADC, East African Community, COMESA Tripartite Free Trade Agreement. This is operating according to a time frame given by the heads of state. It was a indicative time frame, which means that if we don't complete, it's not the end of the world, but it is supposed to be concluded next year. That negotiation on the FTA side has made quite a lot of headway. It has been agreed that fundamentally this is not about reopening the trade arrangements that we have in each of those communities. So we're not going to reopen the SADC FTA or East African Community or the COMESA trade arrangements internally. It will focus on negotiations between parties that are not covered. So in our case, it will be with members of COMESA who are not members of SADC. It will be with East African Community countries that are not members of the SADC. It will cover countries like Egypt, Kenya, and so on. Those are the countries that we've been negotiating with. There's also been a broad agreement on the level of ambition, which is quite a high level of ambition. And now we're at the stage of the concrete exchange of requests and offers. There's a ministerial which is scheduled for the middle of the year. So that is moving. I think that is something that merits a lot of attention, particularly because of I said repeatedly this is the most important trade agreement that we believe we're involved in at the moment. And then let me say also that there is the economic partnership agreement negotiations of the European Union. The European Union has set a deadline unilaterally for the basically what they want to say. They want to say that there must be visible intention through the signing of something by October next year, but it won't be full on ratification and everything of that sort. Otherwise, they say they will remove the interim EPA trade preferences which are granted, not to us because we have the TDCA, but the other member countries. We are not happy with that deadline, but the work is proceeding. There's several rounds of negotiations that have been happening. We continue to be engaging, and it's not easy on we want to improve agricultural market access at South Africa. We have made what we thought was a big concession on recognition of some geographic indications. The European Union, they also want additional agricultural market access. There are trade-offs and issues at stake, as well as we haven't seen the final texts of the issues which were points of contention before the trade-related policy measures. So that work is continuing. The convener, who is my counterpart, the Minister from Botswana has called a meeting of the SADC IFA group for next month, so at the ministerial level, we can take stock of that. But that agreement, or that negotiation, I think you can anticipate there will be quite a lot of developments in the course of this year. Then the Indian, or rather SADC SOCU India PTA negotiations have been making quite slow progress, but I think that we are expecting the pace to pick up. And then the final one I would mention is that at the end of the year, it's anticipated, but it's not anticipated, there will be a World Trade Organization ministerial meeting which is taking place in Bali, Indonesia. And this has agreed on a small work program. And the small work program is supposed to be trade facilitation. Those are, they would be internationally binding agreements on border management matters, customs matters, things of that sort. But many of the developing countries have argued that that is not self-balancing because many of the obligations would come on developing countries, so it has to be balanced with other matters, and those other matters include, quote-unquote, something on agriculture, as well as something for LDCs. I can say at this time, this moment, there are several hundred square brackets around the text on trade facilitation, and there's no real agreement about what the something in agriculture and something for the LDCs will entail. So whether we make it in Bali or not, I think is an open question at this point. But there will be an informal ministerial taking place on the fringes of the OECD ministerial in the middle of this year, and I will be part of that. There's also the process of electing a new director general. It's gone through one round, and a number of candidates were eliminated. So we are now going through a second round, and the membership has agreed that the third round should leave just two candidates in place. We can discuss that if anybody wants to raise that. The other point I want to raise in the introduction only is the legislation. The legislation, there are two bills, I think, or there are three bills that are in one form or another in Parliament. The one is the cooperative amendment, which is due to go to the plenary of the NCOP next month. As you know, it went through the NA in November. We very much hope that there's no, I don't think there are any problems. I think it's straightforward, but the time is quite long, let me just say, because we want to move ahead with the establishment of the institutions. The other one is the intellectual property bill, which, by the way, if that had been through, would have given us an instrument to deal with the royalties issue. So that's where we would recognize things of that sort. And then the third one, I think, as you all know, is the EE bill, which is for the committee. We then have some other bills which are coming. The DG will give you the full list. They include the credit regulation, they include the lotteries. The lotteries bill will be the kind of culmination of the process of reform of the lotteries, which we have been introducing in this administration. I must say that I went to a stakeholder conference last week, and we were discussing what we achieved. There's basically, when I took over, there were 3 to 4 billion rand of unallocated lotteries funds. And at the moment, there are no unallocated lotteries funds. It will be distributed yet, but they have taken decisions on allocating all of them. There is an expected 2 billion or so that might be raised in the course of this year. The bill is intended to make more efficient the system of distribution. A number of reforms have been proposed as a result of a lot of consultation, and that bill is now out for public comment. I know there are other private members still dealing with this kind of subject, so we can just see how they all are compatible or not. But that piece of legislation is the product of a lot of consultation. The other one I want to briefly mention, because I think it's been the product of more heat than light, has been the business registration bill. And let's start off by saying that yesterday I signed an extension of the period of public consultation, which is now to the end of the month. Players outside have got an opportunity to comment on that bill until the end of the month. But I wanted to start by saying that, you know, there's some sort of idea that we're going to be introducing some new bureaucracy that is unprecedented and that is going to have a huge detrimental effect of orcas and small graders. I want to just say that actually that's not the case at all. And I want to just by way of preparation for this meeting, I went and looked at what one municipality in this country, the city of Cape Town, already requires of businesses. And under the current Business Act of 1991, anyone who's involved in the sale and supply of foods, foodstuffs that are handled or prepared in the form of a meal, has to approach the municipality and get a license and pay a fee of 25 rand. Anyone who's in the health and entertainment sector, and that includes Turkish baths, saunas, massage parlors, and escort agencies, among others, has to, indeed, that's what it says, that's a bird right. They have to go and they have to pay 25 rand and then also demonstrate that they are able to operate under the Foods and Publication Board. Any walk-in meals, that is hot dogs, boerewors, rolls, hamburgers, chips, etc. on the street corner, you have to pay 10 rand. If you want to be a hawker, you have to go get this form from the municipality and fill it in. And then you will be allocated a place where you are allowed to hawk. So I'm just saying that it's not that the current situation is no forms, no registration, no regulation. The point is that this happened. I mean, I might add in the city of Cape Town that there were a number of complaints by hawkers, Mitchell's Plain, among other places, about the places that are allocated to them. They're not allowed to just go and operate anywhere. There's an existing framework of registration. It is not our intention to add to that in any significant way in terms of the number of forms, the fees that would be charged. What we want to do is make there to be a consistent framework across the country and across different business sectors. Now, if you are in formal trade, you have to fill out that form. If you operate a shop, presumably you have to go to the municipality and register as a ratepayer. Now, what we want is we want all business activities to go to the municipality, register through a simple, straightforward, and low-cost process. I don't think we envisage anything much more than a form like this as part of the process. Then you would be put on a register, and we would be able to know who is operating. But the important thing of this legislation is its architecture is easy in, but here's the mischief we want to deal with. The existing informal traders, existing hawkers, the existing sponsor shops, the existing small businesses are subject to increasing competition from illegally operating entities in this country. Entities that trade in illegal goods, entities that trade in substandard products, entities that probably employ illegal foreigners, entities that don't pay VAT, entities that do all kinds of other nefarious activities. And what we're saying is we try to deal with this at the border, and we get some success, but we also know that there are plenty of people that get through the border and then are operating inside the country. And so what the importance of this new legislation is about creating a mechanism where we can actually deal with that problem by saying, if we catch you and we convict you of this, then you are off the business register in South Africa and you cannot conduct business in South Africa. We've got a situation at the moment of turn out, turn around, turn around. You catch somebody, you confiscate this or that, they go and operate again in some other guise. And I think that we need to have a mechanism to deal with that. That's what this bill is about. There's still a period of public comment, but let me just emphasize, it is not our intention to raise the bar in terms of the bureaucratic requirements for registration. We want an easy-in system. We can also, of course, in the consultation process, discuss whether what we put in there is adequate or whether it needs to be improved in this regard. But I think the real point is that we need a mechanism to get people who are involved in illegal activity off the register. That's the point. So I think that's the importance of that legislation. So that bill should be coming to the Portfolio Committee in due course. Let me then just finally say that before I hand over to the DG, because I don't want to spend much more time, that we have sought as a department, we have sought to continue to improve in terms of a whole range of indicators of the sort of reduction in vacancies, improvements in the audit reports in financial management, cracking down on any instances you come across of any contraventions of any legislation or any corruption that you come across. And there have been a number of cases that we've had to deal with, mostly I might add, in the agencies, not in the in the department as such. We've also sought to, I think, generally improve turnaround times for the dispersal of any of the products that we offer as a DTI as well. That's an integral part of our work, encompassed by the slogan which we've adopted, a slogan, it's actually a business model of continuous improvement. And I think you will see in the, well, it's not the annual report, it's the performance plan, but I think you will see that what we're doing is targeting yet further improvement in this regard. I might just want to add one more thing, that you may have read that there has been a review of the payment of small business entities. You know that we've been running the SEEP hotline, but it actually concluded that the number of outstanding invoices for small businesses from the DTI was zero. So I think that we have managed to practice what we preach in that regard as well. But with your permission, Chair, I think at this point I'll hand over to the DG to take us through the presentation.
Thank you very much, Minister. So, Mr. October, the DG.
Thank you, Mr. Minister. I think that the Minister has outlined, especially matters relating to trade dimension and the regulatory aspects. I think we're also having the presentation tomorrow on our progress report with regard to the third quarter tomorrow. So I'm not going to go into, let's say, a progress update. I'm going to really focus on the key interventions outlined in your annual performance plan. And as you know, there's a detailed the document that we have submitted to Parliament on the annual performance plan 2013-14, 2015-16. I think I'll get straight to the heart of the matter. I think it's important to know that all our interventions are built on the following five platforms. And as the Minister indicated at the beginning, our core program, our flagship program, is industrial development. So you will see that theme running throughout. But of course, our industrial model is based on an export orientation and being part of global value chains. So clearly, that comes in with the element of in the investment platform and the trade and export platform. And of course, we're also talking about inclusive industrialization, not the old model of the 60s, which was based on a narrow part of the population, a small and propaganda base. We're trying to, and that's why one of our core programs is the broadening participation section and so on. So that's the third work stream, which is broad-based empowerment. The fourth stream, and I think the Minister covered this, is we need to create a fair and effective regulatory environment for both to protect both business owners, but also to protect consumers, to protect shareholders, and that's the regulatory component. And the final component of our work stream is we must create a modern, effective, customer-orientated administration, and that is why the work around performance. And so that, I think, is just to set the context for the different interventions, and as I indicated, the way in which we cluster all our activities throughout the plan and so on. If we then get straight to the key interventions, I think starting with the first cluster, which we call the industrial development. As you know already, one of our key interventions is to annually do a new iteration of the industrial policy action plan, and we will be dealing with that later in the day. So let's just say we've already, because at the, on the 4th of April, we've already, let's say, achieved this particular sort of plan of tabling our annual industrial policy action plan for the year and so on. In addition to that, you will see that plan, we want to, as you know, we're constantly trying to broaden the industrial base, diversify, and we will be adding three new sector-specific action plans for the coming year. We're also looking, and as you know, we'll see tomorrow, we've covered the designation, that is to get the SOEs and government departments to buy local. We will be expanding the number of designations, and we will get to two additional, or minimum of two additional designations. this financial year. And then also we want to, comes out of the industrial policy action plan, we want to deepen and really get into new areas, especially beneficiation and adding value to raw materials, and therefore we will be undertaking two in-depth research projects, especially into the value chains, whether it be platinum, whether it be the iron steel value chain, but we will be doing necessary to expand our areas of intervention in our industrial base. Also, in this year, we want to finalize the special economic zones. As you know, this is one of the additional tools for not only for industrial development, but also to expand industrial development to the marginal parts of country where there isn't existing industrial concentrations. So through this bill, we've already, as I said, it's been approved by Cabinet and currently before the House, so we have to finalize this piece of legislation. I think the first presentation is on Friday into the legislation. In addition to that, as you know, we are focusing on skills. There's a big emphasis since last year's National Policy Action Plan. We added skills as a major priority area. And what we will do is to expand our current programs. The current program is the THRIP program, Technology and Human Resource for Industry program, which is currently managed by the National Research Foundation. And there you can see we've been setting targets to cover 1,750 students and 700 researchers on that program as part of increasing the human resource development. I think it has been noted in one of our presentations that if we're going to move into the area of beneficiation, we need to have an adequately skilled human resource base. Similarly, there's our support program for industrial innovation, and our target there is 20 new projects, and to spend that. This is a program which is aimed at anybody who comes up with new products or new processes, innovation, and to encourage innovation, that program. We hope to also, in this year, draw this program much more closer. It's currently managed by the IC. We hope to bring it closer into the department so that we can align it to our four sectors outlined in the industrial policy. These are the other programs. I won't speak too much about, but just to emphasize the tool making. But especially the EMEA program is really where we just recently the minister launched export development program. We are trying to expand the number of companies that export. And the program of the EMEA scheme is where we assist companies to travel abroad, to do market research, and to display their products. Of course, our target is just under 1,000 enterprises, 940. We hope to assist to take part in foreign missions and so forth. The workplace program challenge is again, we want to assist 51 companies, and this is competitiveness improvement programs where we work with the companies to assist them in upgrading their work processes mainly. Honorable Chair, the other leg then of industrial development is the industrial development incentive. As you can see, which lists our key programs, and as I said, this is where what we refer to as continuous improvement. These programs, some of them are new, some of them are existing, but it's really to improve the efficiency, the effectiveness, turnaround times of these programs. So in this, we lay out our targets that we want to achieve and the amount of investments that we want to leverage through this program. As you know, the automotive came in to replace the old MIDT scheme. We've also introduced passenger automotive incentive scheme. And then the current ones is the business process and services, which I think we've achieved some real successes with regard to attracting major global players. So that's our target for the year is an additional 8 BPO operators. Film and television, that's the other part, which is maybe not given the necessary publicity, but it's really also a program which is taking traction in creating a local film and television sector. And we again want to expand the number of firms we assist to 65. And then the 12 by tax allowance, similarly, is an ongoing program, and we have to expand the other program we mentioned is the critical infrastructure. This is where we supply sometimes bulk services to projects to stimulate industrial activity. This program especially will be given priority this year, and I'll come back to it later, but we're going to expand to developing business infrastructure in the townships. That is industrial parks, business parks, and so on. We're using this particular program. As I said, it's constantly trying to expand the efficacy of our investment. The final one is the one which was introduced last year only. It's a new scheme, but it's already gained traction with the Manufacturing Competitive Enhancement Program, which is now becoming one of our big programs, and we're hoping to target another 300 new enterprises under this program. I'm not going to spend too much time on this. I think the Minister covered some of the trade-related matter, but just to emphasize that our plan is to make substantial progress with regard to the tripartite free trade area. The deadline has been imposed for next year. The heads of state gave the ministers 3 years to complete this negotiation. I think a lot has been, substantial progress has been made in terms of the modalities and in terms of the principles, and they are currently busy with exchange of offers with regard to the grant free trade area. That is going to be emphasis. But we're also continuing our work with regard to SACU, which is to, let's say, imprint a industrialization agenda into the SACU and similarly into the SDI project, which is ongoing work. Then, as I said, turning with regard to our external orientation, the two big parts is to promote exports, and there we set the target of 900 million from getting new exporters. And then our target, so this is our investment pipeline under the Trade and Invest South Africa TISA. We have, and you will see tomorrow, we've secured some major FDI projects from major global players, Nestle, Procter & Gamble, Unilever, others. But we also we have a pipeline of projects, and we hope to have that 50 billion investment achieved. Then turning to the broadening participation and the small business initiative, I think the target there, as you know, the new mandate which we gave CEDA is to expand the number of incubators. So we are dispersing additional resources to them to expand the incubator program, but also the ongoing support to small businesses. And then also to strengthen the CEDA technology program, which is again technology-based incubators. Under the Cooperatives Amendment Act, in the current year, we hope to, hopefully the legislation will be finalized in the NCOP. But what we hope to establish then is a cooperative development agency to at least get that established, to get a business case approved, and to start the implementation of that agency. And then similarly, we want to set up and accept the business case for the cooperative tribunal. These are the two agencies that are established under the new or under the amended cooperative amendment. Then going on further with broadening participation platform, we want to focus on gender and women's empowerment, and our plan is to get cabinet approval for our new national strategic framework for gender and women's empowerment. Alongside it's not only a strategy, but as you know, with all our plans, it includes specific actions, for example, under that specific incentive programs that we will develop dedicated for women-owned enterprises. So that's the new one. And then we'll continue the Isivani's Women's Fund is an existing program where we deal with skills development and support to existing women-owned businesses and cooperatives, and then we are trying to get a new project. I think this morning we had the BE committee. Things are moving. I think Honorable Member Hadebe did indicate that he is working towards completing the BE Act by June or so. And as I said, in our plan, we hope that we can approve the new amendment act this year. And similarly, we will then also, at the same time, finalize the ISP code of good practice. We want to take these, the plan is to let them come out simultaneously so that there's one coherent picture around BEE this year. So that's there. Similarly, the other intervention, the Black Business Supply Development Program is an existing program, and we just have to expand it to a broader range of black entrepreneurs. And the target is set out there. The two new areas we want to get into with regard to our constantly trying to improve and expand is the informal sector strategy. Both at the cabinet Lakhotla, a call was made that we still, there's really the marginalization of, let's say, townships, and economic activity in townships is still a matter of concern, and it's not making its contribution in terms of the economy. So we are going to have, in the current year, finalize a clear strategy for the informal sector and for, let's say, the township businesses, and how we can bring them into the mainstream through different sets of programs and stuff. So it's obviously a difficult area, and it's a new area, but we will be developing some plans this year. Similarly, with regard to the youth enterprise development strategy, it is clear that unemployment rate is highest amongst this particular group, and we need to have a clear strategy at DTI, just in terms of steering to entrepreneurship. We're going to develop our own program and get that out this year. I think the other new programs falling under this broadening participation, we've already got the Enterprise Incentive Program and the MIP. This is existing programs to small businesses. The other ones I mentioned, like 12i, the automotive, that is usually for medium and large enterprises. These programs are exclusively aimed at small enterprises. Similarly, there's the new program that was launched around aquaculture, and we have to assist in new projects in that. And similarly, the other program we want to extend is the cooperative incentive scheme. You will see later when we come to our budget, we are asking in the future years, we're asking for additional allocation from National Treasury, and it will be mainly for these kind of programs. Our cooperative incentive scheme is working very well, and we hope to expand that incentive program with 275 new enterprises. And the other new program that we have is the Incubator Support Program. This is a partnership program, which was launched also last year. It's really where we partner and co-fund the private sector and other players to establish incubators. That's our topic for incubators and co-building participation. Again, I think the Minister covered this area of the regulation platform, but just to recap, we are continuing to work on the gambling policy, but in terms of the actual goals that we have for this year, we really want to still introduce the National Credit Act, the lotteries, and the business legislation is one that we want to still get through or into legislature this year. And then we will also be issuing other regulations and so on. I think then turning to the final platform, which is the administration, I think we set these targets, and as it's we introduced this previously, but we now, for vacancy, we set a target of 7% vacancy rate, turnover rate also of 7%. We set targets for employment of people with disability and then for women in senior management positions, and those targets are set out there. Also, we've set clear targets, and as was mentioned by the Minister, substantially achieved many of them in terms of the payment within 30 days. And so those are the ones which we set out for our targets for administration. Then the other ones is our public awareness programs. As you know, under our group services division, we have the marketing program where we try to roll out DTI to the people through different programs, and those are our targets for this year. We are up to have 80 events, 20 40 outreach programs and then exhibitions to make the broader public and entrepreneurs aware of our programs. Then just turning to the resource allocation that we have, we've got the set out there and in our annual performance plan in some detail. I think think the only thing one can emphasize here is that the bulk of our resources is located and is in the industrial development incentive administration. That's the old tale that we used to have, but as I said, since the request from Parliament, we've specified there were more clearly what of that division deal with. But this is where all these new programs from incubation to aquaculture to incentive administration to MCEP, Manufacturing Competitive Enhancement Program, all of that, and that is now the bulk of our work, and that is where we also hope, as you can see in the outer years, we hope to expand that from 5.5 to 6.7 billion. And I think that's in line with the upscaling of our industrial policy interventions. I think there's also, just to spell out in more detail, that we try to get a clear alignment between our objectives, our strategic goals, the government's core outcomes, and our resource allocation. And in this slide, we just expand it in greater detail. But as you can see, the key objective we want, all our programs is aligned to inclusive growth, decent employment and inclusive growth. Also, to ensure that there's a redistribution or there's, broad-based empowerment. So I think that the section just lays out that our objectives, our programs, and our resources are aligned. Then finally, just to lay out some of our challenges. Being the DTI, we focused on the trading tradable sectors. We, of course, no matter how much we can do from the supply side, ultimately the demand, especially now in the global economy, has an impact on our exports. So as we just had a less overvalued rand, but if we don't have increase in demand from the European Union, we can't really expand our exports significantly. So that is a constraint that we constantly face. But as you know, in our strategy, we are trying to move into new markets, into Asia, onto the continent, and so on. That remains a major challenge, is the slow growth in our traditional markets. The other major one I mentioned earlier with regard to the informal sector strategy, but we still have serious marginalization or dualism in our economy. And that is really to still link small businesses, small-scale farmers, to mainstream activity is still a big challenge. We're making progress with some retailers, but as I said, not all. And the final one where we still face a challenge is, whilst we've now moved decisively to create local procurement among state-owned enterprises and government departments, there's still a real lacking support from big business, especially in, for example, mining sector, where there's massive potential for developing local capital equipment and machinery for the mines, but the bulk of it is still imported, and we're not getting the necessary the speed that we need and so on. So those still remain challenges that we are trying to work through as we roll out our progress. That, I think, comes the bulk of our presentation and our annual performance plan.
Thank you very much. This gives us the opportunity at this stage to raise questions and make comments. But as I just indicate, as we did last week, there's not the opportunity to really go into the IPAP that will follow. I hope I'm quite clear on that particular one. Thank you. Yes, Honourable James, Honourable McIntosh, Honourable Kadir at this point.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you very much to the Minister and the DG for their presentations. I just wanted us to turn to page 21 of the presentation, where you give a table of the medium-term extension framework. And I just want to confirm that what I read is correct. That if one is to ask the question, what is your commitment to trade promotion, you look at collapsing categories, the second category, international trade and economic development, for the last one, the TISA. And if you were to add those two figures together and express it as a percentage of your overall program expenditure, you're committing 5.3% towards trade. And I might be wrong. But that percentage stays pretty much the same. So that for what outlier there, you're committing 5% of your budget trade promotion. So it's not the most important thing that you do here. As opposed to industrial development, which it seems to me, if you take category 4, industrial development, policy development, and you add that to industrial development category 6, those figures express the percentage of 74% of your budget. That's for 2013, 2014, and the projection is it will be 76% budget. So, just looking at those crude figures, and I'm sure there's money somewhere else as well. Your highest priority is industrial development, and your lowest priority is trade. Is that correct?
Mr.
Young,
James,
I'll
make it up.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thanks for those presentations. I think we are fortunate to have such a hard-working minister, and he certainly is on top of his game, not least in trade. So thank you for that. Also from the DG and also the team that sit behind these two very important men for South Africa. One thing, trade negotiations. I don't know if the Minister is aware, but I stumbled on a very interesting website called GGA, goodgovernanceafrica.org, and they won't produce a monthly publication, which I received the post, but on the website they've just done one on trade in Africa, and it's really a good publication. Short articles which a simple farmer like myself can easily understand. And it's really, I think, worthwhile. GGA.org. I've got one question on Zimbabwe. And I'm talking about the trade, but it looks as though there's a distinct possibility there may be a change of regime in Zimbabwe this year, peacefully through the vote. But already the economy is starting to hum, and I understand there are around 5 currencies which are legal tender. Rand, Pula, dollar, British pound, and euro. And they trade freely in them, a fascinating situation. But the point is to release the economy to really grow. What is our negotiations with Zimbabwe? I'm just talking on a trade level, because sometimes we hear the Zimbabweans complaining bitterly. I know we had a kind of most favored nation relationship with them, there are many, many Zimbabweans making a great contribution to our South African economy. Tens of thousands. So I just would like to know what happened with trade negotiations with Zimbabwe, or are they all just part of it? On the legislation, thank you for that confirmation on the registration licensing, but I think the headline I saw is that traffic officers will check your business license. I think at that low level of what one might call the bottom feeders of our economy, and they're very important, those bottom feeders, of spas, shops, and everything else, the opportunities for traffic officers to be persuaded to look the other way would be very substantial. Now, there's just one comment on the mining industry and equipment. Madam Chair, we had a presentation from a mining manufacturing equipment manufacturing person of Velcor. It was a horror story in relation to the electricity, because the municipality couldn't supply the electricity. It was horrifying, gone up 150%. And then they just cut all their supplies, they didn't drain bills. But these guys were exporting significant amounts of mining equipment in Africa. Now, I know there's been a big mining industry service equipment business in South Africa. In fact, this university used to have a special research institute funded by the Chamber of Mines, which was developing special underground equipment, manufacturing. And the people had all the abilities. Bell Equipment started as a family business at a Bangeni in KwaZulu-Natal. It's now huge around the world. We do have the institutional memory, well, I'm old enough, I suppose, to have it, that we have had in this country a very viable mining equipment supplying and manufacturing industry. I just wanted to mention that, Madam Chair. Thank you.
No, thank you very much. Yes. Honourable Kajeka.
Thank you, Chairperson. First of all, I would like to welcome the presentation interesting ministry in Kotoro Committee. And then what is also very important about this presentation is the adequate allocation of resources with the policy priorities. When the minister spoke about the issue of the flagship program, which is the industrial network policy regime, then really when you look at the budget expenditure framework, you can see that it is measured adequately so. Actually, you can see that the budget, the inner budget is tilted towards the industrialization of the country. Because what is critical here is that really, unless we start industrializing the country, the economy of this country will never grow. We know very well that if you go to the West, you go to Western countries, those countries which are suffering now is because they ignore the industrialization part of the country. So I think that that aspect has come out very well. That's why it's highly appreciated. But Chairperson, I think that what is good with this presentation which is coming today is that it comes after we've engaged with the entities. The entities like South African Bureau of Standards, the regulator for compulsory certification, and all those entities. I think that as we move forward, they will act very well in ensuring that the industrial policy is enhanced in the country. But what it is worrying here is the issue of the consumer and corporate. The issue of consumer, per se, whatever. Chair, we did look at the budget of the National Consumer Commission. We felt that with all this good presentation it was, it left a lot of holes. In particular, when looking at the staffing component thereof, I understand that they were supposed to motivate for the position. But when you look at it, that commission is very critical to the protection of the community and the consumer. Really, I like in the presence of the minister, when is that commission going to turn around the corner? In particular, when coming to the issue of staffing. Because if you can look at the organogram which they have, is that the current budget LT is only going to 35% of an approved organogram. So it shows that it is the wrong way to go. But what is worrying is that it does not have any sort of income except from the transfer from the department. So I think that with this budget, how is that going to be enhanced so that our consumers are protected, not taking into consideration that even the big companies, Woolworths or Spurs, even Louis Sapol, always the issue of the week.
They may also, as a result of that,
develop a greater synergy between the what were formerly known as the SWAM. The other issue as well, which of course our WIP has already pointed to with the Consumer Commission, my own concern there, in fact, not my only, because the WIP did cover Honourable Kajevi, the other areas, is that it is so related and linked to trade. The point is, if we're going to slip there, then we're going to find that the non-tariff barriers will kick in other areas. And I think there's a need for a greater monitoring of this linkage between the two. One, what happened to you learned yesterday from the French, Honourable James and I met with them briefly, a couple of the congressmen, both to the left, the right, and perhaps possibly was it central right or something. But one thing did become clear, that South Africa, through the Department of Trade and Industry, has managed to convince other countries of the importance of our localization program, and they made a reference to PASA, I think it was. Is that right, Honourable James, in the start? So it does, and they brought this up, and because we were emphasizing productive investments and the like, and I think that is a very, one needs to work on those, that positive benefit that you've already got out externally as such. The other area that one wanted to raise, I mean, the trend has already been pointed to, but I think last year, one of the committee members raised the issue of our, I'm not sure if we call them ambassadors, diplomats or what, but in our embassies and consulates overseas, there does seem to be constraints on, I'm not sure if I can call it the human resources who are equipped to promote this area in the respective countries. And we raised that particular issue. Likewise, we raised the area of our surprise alert, the WTO, how few South Africans were involved in these agencies. And that arose, we were told, because of our limitation of languages that were required. Very few South Africans seem to be having at least two or three languages that were required. And other countries, in Brazil in particular, you know, 10 years ago hardly had anyone, and now they're running all over in Geneva, the Brazilians. So I think, you know, if they had hardly anyone 10 years ago, we need to also address those issues on trade, apart from anything else. The last point is, I don't normally take up this amount of time and questions, but we also met with the Mauritians, at least I did anyway, and it was a very impromptu call, and some of these things sometimes happen. But one of the things that did come out, which they raised, was the interest in working together with South Africa. And they mentioned two or three sectors, joint kind of venture or partnership, say, in the film industry, where they would do X and we would do Y part, which they didn't have the skills or whatever to do. And that, I think the one means finalizing a production or something like that. The other one was on boat building, and I happen to know you've raised this issue before on boat building and so on. So I'm raising this with respect to trade rather than IPEP per se. It may be useful to explore this because they spoke about their greater footprint in Commercia and the constraints that we may experience in that direction. So I only raise it in that regard because I know they're a small country. But having said that, I must say we are impressed with a lot of the points you have made here so far. And one of the areas, you know, when you were running the theatrical agency, when everyone was acting,
Honourable James said that those figures he was quoting were crude, and I think I would want to underscore that it's not an indication of the relative priorities, the budget allocations. It's the nature of the work that is entailed, which also does affect the budget allocations. I think that the DG said much of our budget goes in transferring funds to support various incentive programs, and that is particularly heavy in the division on industrial development. I also think that this is very, very important, because what are we going to trade in the world? Are we going to just be trading raw materials, or are we going to be trading more value-added goods? And that's a pretty fundamental element of our trade policy as well. So I think that it's the nature of the work, and rather than anything else. It doesn't mean that we if we have more money in the budget, which is the same story with the Consumer Commission, we could use the money, but the budget is not. I think that's the truth, that's the fact of the matter. There's not a lot of scope in the budget for allocating a huge amount of additional resources to all of these things. But in the trade, let me just say, we are very actively engaged in both trade promotion, investment promotion, and also in trade negotiations. The trade negotiations, I've given you the gist of that, and there is a team that is engaged in those. Much of the budget there is for the team members to participate in the various negotiations that are ongoing. That's what it covers. On trade promotion and investment promotion, I think that we need to get this point over, perhaps repeatedly, that there are not many foreign direct investments that come to South Africa, are not interested in what the regulatory framework is or what the incentive framework is, and just sit up shop and operate. So most of them that want to come in here, they want to know what's available, what their issues are, and they engage with TISA. So the TISA pipeline is an incredibly good indication of what is potentially happening. So I think the figures show, and I checked it yesterday, at the end of March, the investment pipeline, FDI pipeline, was 53 billion rand. Now, nobody in any of those value-added sectors that we're tracking, agro-processing, the motor industry, all kinds of other industrial projects linked to the French in manufacturing of locomotives, none of these are in any way giving us any signal that they are losing their interest in South Africa or green energy. They are all continuing in that pipeline. That work is happening from ESA. I might add that the Chief Director of Investment Promotion, Niels Hussen, was appointed the Vice President of the International Body on Investment Promotion. That is a sign of that we are doing world-class work in this area. In trade promotion, we have introduced, as DG mentioned, we've introduced a new export and development program, because it's not just a matter of taking somebody on a trade mission somewhere, paying a lot of money on a hotel and a conference, and then this translates into international trade opportunities. People have got to go through a learning curve where they begin to acquire the skills and capacities for this. And what we've introduced now is all kinds of interventions that have been going on, including our own. We're introducing a common exporter passport, so we can recognize where people are on the continuum of export and development. That's the program that we've introduced. We're raising our game, stepping up our game in this regard. The foreign economic representative that we have, we don't have one to cover every embassy, that's true. Maybe if we had more budget, we could put a few more in. But it's also, these are going to be people who've got serious capacity to add more value than the Durco diplomat. This is what they've got to be. We have this battle in the departments from time to time. And I keep saying to everyone, this is not a training opportunity. This is not a work experience opportunity. This is where somebody's got to add more value than the Durco diplomat. But the Durco diplomats are also doing this work. So one of the things that we've been doing is working more closely with Durco around trying to reinforce each other's efforts. Now, I have a couple of direct consequences of that. One was, after many, many years, there was an agreement by Durco that the representative appointed by the DTI and the World Trade Organization will be a full ambassador, Faisal Ishmael. The second one was that the former chief director on investment promotion was taken and became the Durko ambassador to Saudi Arabia. But because Saudi Arabia is a place where the fundamental issue is investment promotion, so he jumped. And the importance of that was that we got this SAFA, Saudi Arabia, South Africa, and joint initiative, with a 20 billion rand investment for joint projects, which is beginning to roll out. That is the sort of thing that I think that we're trying to do. So reinforce each other's work. So I want to say that, and then we can discuss our trade policy objectives. What are we doing? What are we doing in the BRICS? What did we say in the BRICS? You might have noticed there was no real quantitative target to minister a double intra-BRICS trade by X, because for us, the fundamental issue is the quality of that trade. What are we going to be trading? Are we going to be in a position where we're just suppliers of raw materials? And so actually we are going to be coordinating a joint piece of work to identify value-added trading opportunities in the BRICS. Now that is very much linked to the productive capacity we have in the economy. So I want to say that those are the sort of, in a nutshell, the sort of directions we want to move in. And I would say that I think that the budget figures don't give an indication of the priority. We think they are very much linked. We do say that industrial policy and trade policy, rather than, you know, trade policy isn't simply free-floating and it has no relevance to the productive development of the economy. We do say that, but I think the figures do not. The figures reflect much more the nature of the activities than any kind of prioritization. Let me say on the question Honourable McIntosh about Zimbabwe. Well, South Africa had a bilateral agreement with Zimbabwe, which went back to 1964. It was a preferential agreement with Zimbabwe. But the agreement which is in force now, which is much more favourable actually to Zimbabwe, is the SANFTA, which came into force in 2008. There are quite a number of issues on the trade front. The Zimbabweans have requested derogations from SADC for the non-implementation of some parts of that, particularly as regards the market access by South African goods into Zimbabwe, and there's also been some other arrangements, fees that have been charged, which have a similar effect. And they also requested us that we open up to some of their textile products. That discussion is ongoing with them. I think have seen, and I wouldn't say the Zimbabwean economy is humming. In fact, I think the finance minister has been recently saying that they're humming a bit less than they were a while ago, but we have definitely seen since the political agreement, since the global political agreement came in, we've seen some improvement. By the way, the exchange rate in Zimbabwe is an interesting one. It's 10 rand to the dollar, that's what you get. Actually, US dollar, that's what you get. So you can use rand, but that's what you get. It's, you know, they tell you the price is in dollars, US dollars, and then if you use rand, you have 10 to 1, so it's a bit more than the market exchange rate. But I think that eventually, and this is the problem of something like Argentina years ago, you pick yourself to a stronger currency than your productive base, like the US dollar, you find yourself in a bit of trouble. You're not very competitive as far as your exports are concerned. Eventually they're going to have to bite a bullet about the currency, but that's where they are. On the mining equipment, well, let me just say that Bell Equipment, as you mentioned, won the Manufacturer of the Year in the new combined business awards that we presented a few weeks ago. So Bell won that. We recognized the importance of Bell Equipment. There is a process of bringing Bell, and there's also a company called Desi, which does similar things, those kind of yellow fleet equipment into the APDP. There is also, I think, we are hoping and expecting that as the infrastructure program rolls up, we will create more of a demand for the products of companies like that. On mining equipment, that is something which the work we're doing on beneficiation is also addressing. Because, I mean, there are two parts of where mining is stimulating natural development. One is upstream, one is downstream. Upstream is mining equipment. And we haven't seen that there's been
some degree there's a losing of breath that people are used to make hearing and whatever, the voice and things like that, which are actually common across all the different mining value chains. But there is a need to address some of those issues. So, I mean, we are paying attention to that because I do think we think that's where South Africa has had a competitive advantage then. On the question of the NCC, I don't know. Under the Acting Commissioner, there's been, I think, a significant change in strategy, which personally I think is the correct way, which is building more partnerships, which is trying to find solutions at the source of problems rather than rushing everything to a compliance order which is voided in the judicial or quasi-judicial processes, the consumer tribunal in the court. We're finding, I think, that the institution is beginning to find traction. There were quite a number of people appointed under the previous administration that were not appointed with all the due process. We are regularizing the position of those people. That's a piece of work which is ongoing. I think that there's a degree of credibility that's got to be gained and earned by that institution before we can go back to Treasury, and hopefully that will begin to happen. I can't go into any details, but I can say that the status report that we took on the change is not painting a pretty picture. That's why it's out of that. And so there are some issues around that. On the labelling of goods, I think you know that this is an issue. We have two pieces of work going on about the meat. The one is an investigation by the NCC itself as to whether the existing regulations were crossed by anybody. I think that we should make it clear that it was not just donkeys, it was donkeys as well. Some members of parliament seem to indicate they're quite happy to eat donkeys when I was talking about it on the floor of the House, as you recall. But that's their choice. I don't know when the horses cover donkeys, but certainly what we don't produce in South Africa, as far as I'm aware, is any kangaroo or any water buffalo. So we're doing also global value chains of processed meat products, and consumers have got the right to know what's on those and we're checking to see whether existing regulations were adequate or not. But there's also a notice up for public comment to improve on that, to discuss improving on the existing requirements. As I said before, we haven't got any evidence of any food safety or health issues at stake, but it is a right to consumers if you're happy to eat kangaroo and transport and donkeys and whatever. If you're meat, well, you know, that's your choice, but if you don't want to, you have the right to know what you're eating. I think that's the point. Then on the the question of boards and so on, I think we're aware of this proliferation of, you know, we're operating under legislation. You could see the bill on, what is that bill? The bill on NCRS. That's one of the bills that's coming. We want to bring this back into the department. That's one of the things. For example, the BEE commissioner. We didn't make the BEE commissioner in a board with all of that. I mean, those are the issues that we find. Every time in the DTI family we find an issue, it's with a board. And I think that we've got this agentization of the state. I think I know where it happened. This is a global trend. We ran around to what the international best practice, and we set up a similar set of institutions. Now we've got a proliferation of all of these things. I think it is something that we are considering. I think the point about a lot of outside people accepting the localization, reported observation, look at what I've noticed. It was unconventional policy, but it was important policy. Unconventional but important policy. And I think that what we have found is we found that a lot of people are willing to play in the space because they know that those are the terms that's important to us. And I think we've got some traction as a result of this, which is very welcome. On the question of Mauritius, well, I think we can look at if there are any particular proposals. Except I would just want to say that quite a lot of the post-production work on films, which I
because it's actually quite a good rate. I don't know whether there are partnerships that we could have, because the DG said that we don't make enough out of the film incentive and the support is given. But I actually think that what's happened over the years is that we've made a lot of effort, including with the support we gave to the Cape Town film studio. You know, these productions don't happen by chance. It's not just because of the location. It's actually got a lot to do with what we provide, and there is quite a lot of. I was in the Free State the weekend, and people were asking about what kind of bring some films up there. I told them that actually when I went to the film studio, I went to see the set of the film which is coming out, the life of Thabo Mandela, Long Walk to Freedom. And I walked in there, and there's a full-on size set of rubber knives. You tap on the wall, it's made out of plastic. You go and there's Roger Sisulu's house. The same thing. You knock on the wall and it's made out of plastic. That plastic was made in the Natomi Cape of Lupate. You know, those things have importance. The industrial activities that spin off. That is quite important. So I don't know, DJ, over to you.
Melissa, I think you've covered most of it. But I think just to maybe just comment on the first point, which I think was raised about in our budget, we also have, even though it's under incentive administration division, we have about 209 million, which is given to support companies undertaking trade missions and so on. So I think that there is the, obviously under TISA and under IDED, that's where the bulk of our activity is. And as the Minister emphasized, we do have about 117 million which is spent on our foreign offices. So actually our foreign offices is quite a high cost item, but as I said, we cover about 20 embassies where we do have foreign economic representatives. We are going to expand that by about five new offices this year, going to new markets like Indonesia, Turkey and others. But I think the Minister has made the point that before you can export, you must produce. And the biggest problem we faced was we were eroding our export base or our production base with, and that's why we had to introduce, the biggest program we introduced was MSEP. To really stabilize it. What you find now, for example, if you take the UK and Germany, even though the pound has devalued by 20%, they're not able to increase exports because the industrial base has been loaded. Whereas Germany, which has maintained its export base or its production base, is able to take part when the Chinese economy picks up, they're able to export something to China. So I think it's very important that we get that, as the Minister said, a combination right. But it is important. We are now giving more emphasis to export promotion. That's why I think members go into detail of what was mentioned is our passport program and our export development program. That's for new emerging exporters to introduce them into this market. I think I'd just rather emphasize that. And then finally, on Booker Davis' point, we are giving, hopefully we will be making the appointment soon, finalization of the NCC commissioner. And then we are also working with we have stabilized the institution, we are filling and let's say regularizing many of vacancies that's achieved, and as I said, in this environment we hope to be engaging with this for the expansion of the budget with regard to the NCC.
Now, thank you very much, DG. Are there any other comments, questions? Honourable McIntosh, Honourable Levy, Honourable Obama.
Madam Chair, just a quick question. The question of exporting our scrap metal, and I'm thinking of IPAP and trade agreements, and I'm pleased to see the Minister is applying his mind to this. The thing that I can't understand, and maybe he can tell me, if one sees that the national interest is being seriously compromised by an export, and we have obviously international obligations in terms of IPAP, and I understand that. Is there not some way in which between the Treasury, Customs, DTI, you cannot invoke some law which, as it were, would put a moratorium on exports until such time as you have negotiated through IPEC. That's my question.
Thank you very much, Honourable Khadir.
Thank you, Chairperson. All the other solutions which I have here is the issue of the WTO. Honourable Chair, we know very well that for the past years there was little you got out of that. Out of the WTO in particular. If you remember the Doha round and all those things which were involved in that trade. So the question is, since there is going to be a change of the DG now, what possibility are going to have a developmental type of a DG so that the issues of the developing countries are really taken into consideration there? Are we making any headway? Because we pay a lot of money. When you look at the affiliation fees for those people, we pay a lot of money. Apart from the fact that we don't have people in the Okano framework, WTO, but I thought that policy-wise, we must be able to gain something out of it so that we can get a command for what we're putting in.
Thank you very much, Honourable.
So much in terms of price, and I was told this one is local.
expedited. I know this is not directly in your area, but, you know, I think because it affects our, you know, investment so much, we hope that you may be able to intervene in this direction with your fellow members of the executive. Thank you. Over to you, Minister.
Okay, well, first of all, I think the we've already discussed once before the scrap metal policy trade that's going to come into being. Determination, the regulation, is falling under the Minister of Economic Development, and they've gone through a process of public consultation. I'm not quite sure when the final outcome will be made public, but will be gazetted. But broadly speaking, what's going to be required is that, first of all, since there's a high amount of crime associated with scrap metal export, is that you're going to have to demonstrate that the goods in question will be being obtained. Secondly, that since there's also, we understand, smelting of precious metals together with other scrap metals, that there's going to be a metallurgical certificate, and then there will be price advantage to be offered first to the local industry. We think that might begin to turn around the situation where we export the resources of the metals, as some term, even to countries that don't allow their own scrap metal to export it. So I think that's the story. The process is underway. The consultation is finished, and we now need that item to be vetted by the Minister of Economic Development. On the WTO, well, I think first of all, it's just to say that there are there are one or two South Africans that work in the WTO administration. It's not that there's none. But I think in general terms, we are underrepresented in many international institutions, and that goes from everything from, I mean, it's one of the reasons why South Africa lobbied so strongly for us to take over the AU Commission. We are underrepresented in many international agencies. So that's a point of something that over time needs to be seriously thought through. I know JOCO is applying its mind very seriously to this matter. But let me just say then, what is the state of play in the WTO Director General position? I think that's what you're asking. There were nine candidates that were originally nominated by the governments for the position. One of them was the former Trade Minister of Ghana, who was the AU-supported candidate. There was another African who was nominated from Kenya, who was not within the AU endorsement process. The way it worked was that they always ran campaigning. There was a set of presentations also in Geneva, and the first round of elimination has taken place, and four candidates were eliminated. They included both of the Africans. They were both eliminated, along with the nominee from Jordan and the nominee from Costa Rica. Who is left now is a nominee of New Zealand, nominee of Brazil, nominee of Mexico, nominee of Indonesia, and nominee of Korea, the five left. As I said earlier, the idea now is to go into the next round, which would be two-stepping, and then the final round will be to choose one or two. Now, our position has been that there is a weak convention, but a convention nonetheless, which says that this time round, it ought to be the turn of one of the regions that has not held this position before, and that would be Africa or Latin America. African candidates, as I said just now, have both been eliminated. So we are beginning to home in and say it's now Latin America's turn. The others, New Zealand has had it before. There has already been an ASEAN a DG. There has been, Korea is in the OECD. So we are saying that it ought to be Latin America. When we look at the two candidates for Latin America, we've engaged very closely with the what they each represent, and our conclusion is that the Brazilian candidate Roberto da Azevedo is the one that we think would be more likely
to be able to carry forward an agenda that is supportive of the interests of the majority of the membership of the WTO. So it's not much of a secret that we are supporting Roberto Azevedo for the position as DG, but we have to see how it's going. I have seen reports suggesting that he is the front runner at this point. I don't know whether that's true or not. I believe he has done rather well so far, but I think that is a viewpoint which quite a number of developing countries and emerging economies are beginning to settle around. So that's in a nutshell where that process is at. I mean, the DG will come into office on the 1st of August, but I don't know. WTO is a funny place. They say the world can come tumbling down if we don't reach an agreement. But then comes August. August is completely that's leave time. Nobody does any work in August. So effectively, you'll take charge on the 1st of September, and then early December, is the ministerial. So whether the incoming DG, whoever it may be, is going to have much impact on the Bali outcome, I think remains to be seen. But as I told you already, there are lots and lots of challenges even around the Bali outcome. I think there really are a couple of agendas that are working around. I think this is the thing. There's a view around that the way forward is to, as it were, almost nobody says that directly, but forget the Doha mandate, forget agriculture, those kinds of issues, and focus on what's called global value chains. Global value chains is saying that which is true, much of international trade now is in intermediate goods, and that if you have a player in export trade, you import some components or add value to it, you export it somewhere else, that may not even be the final place. But that's how it is. And so the argument becomes issues of the 21st century and trade facilitation, services and production are increasingly linked together, that there ought to be an agenda like that. Well, I think we many of us, when we have components that we need to import for product, we've already let them in duty free pretty much. We are prepared to engage on a negotiation on trade facilitation. I don't think South Africa would have much trouble meeting any of the obligations, but many of the obligations will fall on other developing countries and will involve resource deployment. And other developing countries and developing world as a whole needs to get something out of this that meets the developmental needs. And we don't think the Doha mandate is irrelevant. We consider that it continues to need to guide the work program. So I think the incoming DG is going to have a major, major challenge. And of all the candidates, I think the vision and the possibility of trying to engage in a new way may unlock a process that's more friendly to development. We judge Roberto Azevedo to be the candidate. On the question of the GIs, I think I've understood this one probably even here before, when we look at GIs, we have to understand something of the history of food products in the world. And the vast majority of food products that are consumed around the world come from what historians call the Fertile Crescent, which is roughly speaking, from the Middle East into Europe. And so when we talk about names of food products, there are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds that have derived from that part of the world, and there are precious few that derive from the developing countries. So as far as I'm aware, we have a potential claim on two GIs, which is Rooibos Honey Bush, and the other one is Karoo Lab. The EU is giving us, we could have thousands and thousands, farm ham, cheddar cheese, chicken cheese, I don't know. Everything you can think of under the sun. Not unique to us, when Mexico negotiated, they had tequila and versus the whole suit. These products have come to the developing world through colonialism and have been operating and using those names in the developing world for centuries. That's the battleground. Now, when this issue came up, this is our one little GI that we've got, that somebody wants to go and register. We've objected into the process where that happens. So somebody can claim a proprietorial name around this. We've objected in the process that's involved in. We've been urged to become part of the EU's process on geographic indications. We're still exploring exactly what that means. I think we ought to be wary of, we would go into something where we would endorse a huge enterprise around GIs, where our producers would be cut out or would have to pay royalties or something. I think we would really be wary of that. I said earlier that the tool we've got to deal with that is this intellectual property bill that continues to be in Parliament, because that recognises indigenous knowledge. Part of indigenous knowledge is this. And I think that would give us a tool nationally to deal with that, which would then be subject to international treaties and all that, which we could apply abroad and claim abroad. So I think that would be the issue there. On the other furniture, the forestry and furniture project, which has been in ICA for ages and ages and ages, was held up by the question of water licenses. And I'm glad to say that now has improved quite considerably. Some of the water licenses are being issued and that program is beginning to roll out. But they make a number of points. I mean, first of all, if foreign product is, imported product is higher priced, I don't know what the tariff arrangement is, but we could look at that. But the important point, I think, is that we have agreed in the framework of the accord on localization, we agreed that we will multiply the efforts of government purchases, because we are limited under WTO rules to our designations have got to be the state, and state organs, state entities will be required to purchase from local sources according to the percentages we designate. We can't extend that to a range of private sector players, but private sector players, government, business, labour, community, all agreed that they would move towards localisation of proudly South African procurement. And one of the areas mentioned was furniture. I think we need to be encouraging people to make that choice, particularly if there's a price advantage, which you mentioned. Because quite often the price is the other way around. If the price is a price advantage, why are we not pushing this much more strongly? And I think it's correct that if your constituency office, because this is what we all said we do. I think we're part of community. We're part of something as MPs. That we should take decisions in our constituency office procurement in favour of locally produced products. And then on the visa question, well, I know the Minister of Home Affairs is pretty sensitive to these questions. Lady Pandor, they are get underway to try to introduce things like expedited business visas. We do, TISA does work with Home Affairs around that. Why we can't have absolute free for all is because we are subject to a lot of illegal activity. That's what it is. That's why we can't just simply not have any visas. For all the honest and serious business people we're getting, we can have a multiple of other people that want to come in and engage in illegal activity in the country. That's the challenge we face. But the expedited business visa thing would be that they would be recognised business people and they would easily get a visa and maybe a longer term visa and stuff like that. That's the kind of work that's going on. It hasn't hit where it's desirable at this point in time, but we do try to intervene to support that.
Just to add one last point, I think the Minister's covered all the questions. On the rooibos issue, as the Minister indicated, we escalated that when the Minister wrote to French, but also to the EU Trade Commissioner and to the EU Ambassador, and we have elicited their support there to stop this registration in France on the rooibos. And in addition to that, our desk in the division is working with the industry to register under the existing trademark legislation to just use that as well. And then finally, we did manage to, I mean, the sector is growing, we managed to, through the BS as well, increase exports to China with, I think it's 800 sort of tons of big, big orders we've managed to secure on our trade missions to China for this product. So this product is growing and has potential.
And thank you very much, Minister and DG. Now we're going to break for a 10-minute tea break. I would hope the time. Emeritus of Science is trying to be back here about 12 o'clock to continue with the iPad. Remember, we have the presentation, now will be our opportunity to engage. Thank you.
Yeah. arguing for the resources.
Thank you.
We're back again to the IHAP just to advise members that the sort of basket of gifts which was handed out to the men, it's not that the women were boycotted, it's just that mine happens to be in my office. And of course, the Honourable Suzanne Herbert is not here today. And this is just a sample, if you like, of the different companies, organizations who produce these books that they support CEDA. And it does give one an idea as to how versatile and differentiated they are in their support. So it's not from me, but it's from CEDA, if I'm not mistaken. Right. And it is a little note to that point. Now, we are going to try and move speedily into the IPAT. Fortunately, the acting DDG, Mr. Garth-Trotten, did address this. So it's now a question of engaging with the Minister on the matter. And I think, Minister, during that engagement, you'd be welcome to flesh it out more if you wish. I think that's the way we ought to go. Right, I see the Honourable McIntosh, the Honourable James, and it's at that point as we start. Thank you.
Madam Chair, yes, Mr. Strachan gave us a good presentation, so I don't want to go into that. But, you know, this kind of thing actually makes me proud to be a South African, Madam Chair. It's good stuff, and it's good, really it's good. And I was just looking at the macroeconomic data at the back, which is from the Reserve Bank, the Economist, Quantech, and so on. And one sees some of the keys there. Which is, of course, the interest rates on 27, which is a huge story. And then the SI 29 on page 15, the current account balance is hugely worrying. But the great thing is we've got these statistics, and also that labour employment on slide 34, page 17, is actually dipping up. And of course, the other interesting thing we all find about the exchange rate is that in fact the real, which is the one on page 1438, that our real effective exchange rate is actually pretty much in this a good band. But I do have a question to the minister around IPAC, and it arises from a comment by a man called Mr. Craven, who works for Kosatu. And he welcomed IPAC and said, this is a wonderful counter to neoliberalism. Now, I have a Marxist lexicon, which I consult every now and again to try to understand all the meanings behind some of the use of these words. And then we, of course, know that NUMSA has made a strong statement saying that the NDP is nothing more than a neoliberal document. And I think we all know that neoliberal is a polite word for an FC, so a capitalist, in other words. So the point I'm concerned about, Madam Chair, and I think the minister must tell us where is the department standing on the NDP? Because it would appear to me that there's a debate going on, not just in the whole of South Africa, but among important elements in the South African society and in terms of determining political policy. We also have a trade union called the HAL, and I use the terminology, it's an octopus in the DTI with tentacles into every little entity. Now, I don't know, is NUMSA, the HAL with NUMSA, being critical of it? Because if that's the case, Madam Chair, we have a problem in South Africa. And I think trade and industry and promoting ICAP and everything else in the light of what Mr. Craven and NUMSA saying. So, in a sense, I want to say, or ask the question, which from the good book that I read quite often, when Joshua said to them, choose you this day whom you will serve. And I think the minister tell us, is he for NDP? Does he disagree with Mr. Craven? Does he disagree with NUMSA, like the president has disagreed with them? I think we need that policy clarity, Madam Chairman, for the national interest, and certainly for the success of IPAC.
Yes, we do seem to have travelled down the streets of political lines and the like, but let us move on. Honourable James.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to say that according to the numbers that I've looked at, Minister, 300,000 jobs have been lost in manufacturing since 2008. So we're seeing about a figure of 1.8 million employed South Africans in manufacturing. Over the last decade, we've had a high of 2 million in the first quarter of 2008 and the last quarter of 2009. So that's the one number. The other number that I've looked at is the fact that 440,000 small business owners have closed shop between 2006 and 2011. And as you know, 2012 to 2013 is uninspiring when it comes to manufacture. It's characterized by low export levels, high input costs, squeezed margins, labor market outcomes, and adequate skills. So that's what the manufacturing sector looks like in terms of its characteristics. And we're obviously part of the global economy, we understand how it ebbs and flows and so on. But there's a contraction rather than an expansion. Now, your department is going to spend, for the next financial year, 7.1 billion on industrial development. And I suppose one could justify it by saying this is an investment in industry and therefore there will be job growth in the future. But it's an awful amount of money that will be spent on a sector where there is no evidence of any global jobs. So I say that as a series of observations and would like your response to that. I also wanted to echo in a different way, and partly it's not your problem. overlap, and there's some fits and some on and so forth. But the fact is that there is no... We govern at the most central level by somebody who is willing to accept the lowest common denominator and not take a strategic decision around what matters in terms of economic policy. So we sit with the National Development Plan, we sit with IPAC, we sit with the economic aspect. The question is, what are we doing?
Thank you, Secretary. I think that as we reiterated, as we said last week, that this was one of the best presentations which we were given to the clarity and the direction and the clarity of the direction which is proposed. That's why I thought I'd warmly accepted last week. But Secretary, what I'll go into is the issue of I know that the political temperature tends to be hotter now because of the election is here. So that's why that sometimes I certain like to respond in some of the issues which are raised. But the first question I've raised is the issue of the migration of South Africa towards bigger technology, the energy mix. I think there's an emphasis around that. And then, so on this issue, I can see that that one is a long term left. But really, once you start using nuclear technology, usually the skills which are there are very rare. They are very rare and then very difficult to build up. So, take into consideration that the Department of Energy and Public will really be starting to roll out of you. What else the DTI as the overseer of the industrial politics there? The issue of those skills development. Remember when we met the ambassador Petrak of Russia, we really started with that. There must be cooperation between Russia and South Africa because they have the skills which we need, which is in the nuclear technology. They have those skills. They have the skills which they have in the liquid petroleum industry. Because it's what reserves of shale gas in the country. So the issue is that when the department interacts with their counterpart, this issue of skills which are needed, how far are you in liberating those skills from the other countries which are already advanced? Around that aspect. And then the other issue, Chair, was the issue of what the coal industry. It's very good that it's also being emphasized as the as one sector where there's going to be growth. But when we dealt with the previous item to come, Chair, we invited some to come and give us a briefing on the issue of the exports of our goods. But they raised the issue of the shipping now, not the boats, the boats as well. When it comes to shipping industry, they said that there's not even a single ship which is bearing the South African flag. So when looking at long term, I know that it is the starting point. Will that be addressed as we move forward? And then on the issue, Chairperson, on the issue of the IPAP itself as a policy, I think it's one of the best policies this government has come out with. Because we know very well that for any country to advance, the state must intervene in the economy as a starting point. And then if the previous regime intervened successfully in the economy, that's why we had our SOSOS, we had our ISCO, we had our SOSOS, we had our own ESCOM. So we chose that when you look at the history, that the state must really intervene so that it can direct development in a particular way. So that's why that we will continuously support the industrial policy action plan, because it shows that through it we will be able to leverage our natural resources at the same time build. Usually, you know, the private sector is very aware sometimes. They are sitting in that way, they will not enter. But the state itself must intervene and try to create new industries where necessary. So that if they have developed, then we can reap it at an appropriate time. But we know very well, Chair, that as the Minister said previously, Germany is better off now because it was able to develop its industrial base. So I think this part, this industrial position there, is really emphasizing that aspect, which is really at the department, in the other department in the economic sector, they must really appreciate it for their cohesive efforts. You know, what I like with this thing is the cohesiveness that from the different departments, there's a whole cast on this single issue. No, I like
in the Department of Home Affairs is also buying in, so that we must have a special visa for business people, so that they think we can make a difference. So I think that with this type of policy, this country is going to see a huge difference, going to make a huge change in the unemployment level. But when coming to the issue of the national development plan, I think that the organization I represent adopted that plan in the Manong conference. As it adopted that plan, I think each and every person who hearing that flag, the black, green and gold, is going to comply with that plan. So I think that across the board, from the president to a former president in the war, in the rural area, will fly that plan. That plan, that the national development plan is a broad view. But what's happening is that in order to achieve those long-term objectives, that this is one of the things we have to do as we move forward. One of the first things to increase the industrial base of the country through the ITEM. And then from that to grow the country through the new growth path, because we identify the sectors where there's going to be in the intervention. And then in the long term, we go to the issue of the skills, which you said that it's good that the group, the IT identity, the tertiary type of service. Now when you think about who came that, you think about high-level skills, which cannot be developed over 4 years. No. It's going to take this minimum, it's going to take 10 years to develop an Indian engineer. It's going to take 10 years to develop that. So I think that with the sequencing of the events around this item, really the people who are behind that, they must really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you very much for raising those points, Honourable Kadebe. And secondly, Minister, DG, the entire department, etc., I think what really impressed me in this situation was the clear emphasis on the transversal interventions and the linkages thereof. You know, there was always an understanding, public procurement, financing, etc. But it was very difficult to even see where SAFSARS, etc. all fitted in the scheme of the ITAP. We had what the Honourable Kadeli has called a cohesive approach. Where is everything linking up? And this particular iteration, I think, clearly details that linkage and go on to indicate as to how this will be done. In particular, when this was given to us the other day by DEG Stockings, it was the administrative crisis and the developmental trade came together far more clearly, and I think the clear acknowledgement by the department of the importance of how we would support strategic industries, these strategic industries, whether it is steel, the value add from iron ore, or in fact, different industrial houses that focus on active beneficiation in relation to the creation of jobs. And certainly we will meet with one of these companies later on. But it does, I think the Minister, you've made this clear over certainly the last 4 or 5 years that we've been here this term, that if we are going to grow economically and develop as a country and to provide significant increase in jobs, we don't really have a choice but to industrialize, across from agro through to the mines, and to focus on appreciating that mines, we do need mines. There was a joke on the FATV this morning, I just happened to catch it while I was working on a report, and that was someone apparently had said, if it wasn't for the mines to the two presenters, Boyle and so on, you'd be sitting there naked. I didn't really appreciate the value of the mines until that statement, but it may take a joke like that for us to realize the role the mines can play in terms of the value add, the chain, if you like, of beneficiation, which is what we're trying to do now, the emphasis in IPEP of that, but of course also skills. And, you know, without a doubt, I think that the different views that are being expressed publicly are really the sign that we have a mature democracy. It's my own view. I hear that my own supper table, dinner table, with relatives, including the immediate family. And I say, oh, I'm so happy to hear you speaking openly like this about the different things. Let's go to the same for our wives, partners. But it doesn't say that this is either a presidential policy or a manual policy or that. I think that it comes close. I'm not saying that we may not need to improve it here and there with an iteration or two. But I think, for me, I saw it as the natural sort of part of that historical legacy from the Freedom Charter to the RDP, with the recognition, quite frankly, members, that our environment is informing our strategy. And surely that is what we want to achieve. Thank you. Over to you, Minister.
Well, thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, I presume I didn't hear the presentation last time, but I presume that they would have conveyed something of the, what I said earlier, that since this is the last one that covers the full financial year, we have tried to take stock of what we think has been achieved, and also of the challenges and the way we need to move in the next administration in trying to be more effective in industrial policy. Now, I think if you follow that, you'll see that we identified about five areas where we think that more intensive work needs to happen as a platform for moving further forward. And I think that the message that could have come out of that would be that we need to raise the impact of our industrial policy in the next period. Now, I think that you say we're in a democracy. I think we're beginning to be able to have a mature debate about industrial policy. So I'm going to respond not just to what we've heard now, well, I will respond to that. I'm also going to respond to what I read Honourable James and his colleague said yesterday about IBAN. If I understand it correctly, they say we're spending too much money on a program that's too dispersed across too many sectors, and that instead of a heavy-handed approach, as they call it, we need a light-touch approach to industrial policy. Now, I want to start off with an anecdote. A little while ago, I went to the opening of the Telumat factory in Atlantis, and this was also attended by the Premier of the Western Cape, who was supportive of the idea that the Telumat factory had opened in Atlantis. It in fact had replaced, in terms of the workforce, because more than 90% of that workforce used to work for Telumat, which closed down a few years ago. So welcome the fact that happened. Now, we had a presentation from the CEO of the company, which will be manufacturing television sets under the Sony brand and the Hisense from China, and will be selling these TV sets into the South African market and probably into the South African market as well. And they told us that what did this factory depend on? It depended on the tariff rebate scheme that we introduced for the television sector. That is the tariff in force on other TVs that come in, but the rebate also that we offer on two stages. The one for completely knockdown kits, where you populate the circuit board, you get almost all the inputs are duty-free. If you don't populate the circuit board, you get semi-knockdown kits, you get a lower level of rebate. It depended on the 12i tax incentive. It depended on the localization of the set-top boxes. They complained, and I think we know this matters in the court, they complained of the slowness in the rollout of the migration from analog to digital TV. But that's a matter in the court outside our hands. That's what they said. That was what that factory owed its existence to. Now, I want to ask, this is not priority sector for us. It sits in some part of advanced manufacturing as a particular. It's not a priority sector. Should we not be involved in that? Which of the, in the name of light touch, should we not have been implemented to support that television manufacturing? We say a number of other things. Again, they're not big priorities in the IPAC. The IPAC, as you know, it's got sectors where we do online work, the sectors where we are doing qualitatively new work, where we see real growth opportunities. These are capital goods industries, these are green economy, this is agro-processing, this is beneficiation. There are a number of other sectors. They include the business process services. The business process services owes every single business process service operation that exists in South Africa, owes its existence to the fact that we provided and turned the incentive from a CapEx to an OpEx incentive. The film incentive, we saw that the film support program has given rise
to industry of film production. And I've engaged with the studios. They tell us we compete with Eastern Europe, with Brazil, with everybody else. If we don't have a support program in place, they don't come here. That's the simple part of the matter. The clothing and textile sector owes its existence to the fact that we changed the scheme from the duty credit certificate to the incentive program, the clothing textile incentive program. Owes its existence to that. Now, I think that is what we have done. We have other schemes, APDP, all the other programs that are in place, owe their existence to that. Now, when we are in a stage of threats of decline and deindustrialization, as we are not just in South Africa but around the world, there is an imperative for us to act counter-cyclically, to increase the what we do. When people are not investing in the manufacturing sector, then what we do is we try to support them, we try to unlock their investments and competitiveness raising, because we know that if they don't do that and they wait for better times, what's going to happen is at the end of a period they're going to find themselves not existing. So I want to know, which of these programs should we not have been doing, and what in the name of light touch should we be doing less of than we are doing? Because I want to say that we have not tried to pick winners. We have not tried to direct against the advice and the wisdom that comes from the industry players, business and labour. We have worked with them in developing our programs. We have gone through exercises of self-discovery to inform our programs. We have negotiated programs with players. We have tried to extract benefits from them in terms of investment, job creation, and the like. And I think that's the shape of the iPad. That's what it's about. I already mentioned our priority sectors where we can see the growth. They are identified in the iPad. But we have an existing manufacturing economy which is quite diversified, and which I would want to say, we can't afford to let large chunks of it just go down the tube. If we did that, we'd be losing jobs. Now, let me come back to the point that was made. We were on a growth path up to 2008. We were on a growth path where actually manufacturing was not making the requisite progress, where consumption-driven sectors were growing twice as fast as production-driven sectors, where we already had a wide current account deficit, where we saw that manufacturing was losing ground. Now, Honourable James says we lost 300,000 jobs. I think it's 200,000. We lost 200,000 jobs in 2008 in manufacturing. That was in the context where we lost 1 million jobs in this economy as a whole. 20% of them, 200,000, were in manufacturing, more than proportional. We faced a very serious and significant risk of large-scale deindustrialization of this economy. That's what we faced. Now, what do we say we have achieved over the last 5 years? Not that we have turned around this growth path. Not that we have placed value-added activities at the forefront of our growth and development. But we have shown that where we have intervened purposefully in the way I described, we have achieved positive results in terms of investment, in terms of growth, and less so in terms of jobs. But then that is not very different from the global trend. That is not very different. But manufacturing sectors are also very big job multipliers. So lots of people turn around and say, yes, most of the jobs are in services. Correct, many of the jobs are in services. But I think the experience is that those service jobs are more strongly rooted and are of better quality if they are linked to an economy that is growing its value-added sectors than if they are completely footloose. You want to take a current example, Cyprus. You want to run banking services for the benefit of Russian oligarchs, and something happens, boom, all those jobs go. They were not rooted in the productive sectors of the Cyprus economy. That's the problem with footloose services. On the other hand, in Germany, if you are a growing, productive, industrial economy, there are many more quality service jobs linked to that economy than there are otherwise. I think that's the lesson that we need to draw. So what we are saying is we're saying we need a higher impact industrial policy as we move further forward, because we have not yet made the structural changes that we need in the economy. Yes, we have made improvements against the background of extremely adverse and difficult circumstances, but we think that if we bite this bullet of beneficiation, If we bite the bullet of creating the African regional market and supporting industrialization across the continent, if we work much more purposefully with our BRICS partners, if we identify new export markets, we think that we have, and if we continue to roll out the infrastructure program on a more effective basis and we get industrial development off that, we think that we are on a platform where we can have a big impact. Now, one of the other points was in is that we haven't mentioned the NDP. Well, I would draw the attention of honourable members to the very first sentence after the prefaces in the IPAC, in this document. The very first sentence refers to the NDP. Let me just go a bit further and say that the mandate, I believe that we operate on. We operate on a mandate. This is the resolution from Mangaung on economic transformation. And it says, and I'll just quote a few sentences from it. The National Development Plan is a living and dynamic document and articulates a vision which is broadly in line with our objective to create a national democratic society and should be used as a common basis for this mobilization. It then goes on to say, within the NDP vision, critical instruments and policy initiatives will continue to drive government's medium-term policy agenda. These include the National Infrastructure Plan, and there's a whole lot of things about that, the New Growth Path, and the Industrial Policy Action Plan, which guides the reindustrialization of the South African economy. So I don't believe that there is a conflict between what's said in the NDP and IPAC. The NDP doesn't in fact say a huge amount about industrialization. It talks about the need for us to develop skills. It talks about the need for us to move towards less capital-intensive industries. It doesn't say we shouldn't have an IPAC. It doesn't say we should have a soft-touch IPAC. It says many of the jobs will be created in this economy in the service sector. I just argued why industrial policy is important for the creation of those jobs in that sector. So, let me say that there's a debate going on. Lots of people have got different views and visions about the NDP. I don't think that IPAP and the way we're doing IPAP is trumped by the NDP or requires us to drop IPAP because there's an NDP in place. Now, the Honourable James mentioned that there were, I don't know whether his figures are correct, he said 400,000 SMEs that have closed. The rate of survival of SMEs is low in any economy. In the South African economy, for every 7 SMEs that are opened, 1 year later, 5 of them will have closed. Only 2 out of 7 will have survived. The world average, I think, is about 1 to 1. It shows us that the establishment of an SME is a difficult activity that requires a huge amount of willingness by the SME themselves to take a lot of risks up front. Now, in South Africa, we have, a particular circumstance. We have a circumstance where the small business environment was not just one under apartheid of neglect. It was one of active discouragement and underdevelopment. That's what it was. And so I think that our program is to try to say, let's find a stronger and more sustainable basis for SMEs based on the industrialization of the economy. The president's talked about, where are the black industrialists? One of the things that we're trying to do is we are trying to pick out those parts of the SME program which have the biggest impact in terms of the creation of real entrepreneurs that can be active in the real economy. So, incubation programs are the ones that we picked up. We've talked about that in this committee. That's also what we're trying to do. We're trying to use the tool of BE, just one of several tools, to try to get more commitment by big companies so that we create more of a symbiotic economy in which big, small companies relate to each other much more. And SMEs are not entirely dependent on contracts with governments. That's what we want to do. We want to create a stronger, more symbiotic development of that sort. Now, I think that that is the vision and the direction that you want to go in. Now, I think here's the debate. Is it higher impact, or is it soft touch? Or what were it? Light touch. Now, I mean, light touch is, I think I would just recommend that's not a very attractive phrase to use. Light touch is associated with regulators, the developers in the financial sector, who didn't know what derivative trading was about and thought that the banks knew best. I think we know where light touch regulation went to. I don't think light touch is what we need smart touch. We need smart touch. We need to be able to work effectively, not on our own. Government has never said that we can industrialize the country. I mean, can I use this phrase? This is a sector where we attempt to steer but we don't run. We don't have public companies operating in the industrial space. What we try to do is we try to influence the direction of industrial developments and manufacturing so that we create more jobs and create more job multipliers in this economy. Have we got there? Absolutely not. What do we need to do? I would argue we need to raise our game here. Then on the nuclear technology, that is one of the areas that we've identified in advanced manufacturing, potential opportunities. We are working around that. There is something called the Nuclear Energy Association of South Africa, and that association is bringing together a lot of companies that are potentially involved in the nuclear build. Though when the nuclear build happens, these are the companies that we're involved in. I've learned through engagement with them, there's something called the Nuclear Island, and then there's called Rest of Plants. The Nuclear Island is the high quality industrial development which requires international certification. And we can argue that we must get South African companies to play in that space. I know that Rest of Plant doesn't just mean, I originally thought it meant you build the office block and the car park, and we said we can't just be doing that. But it means more than that. There are some significant manufacturing opportunities that lie in this area as well. But in general terms, we're trying to develop and position South African companies so that when and if we make a decision about nuclear power, South African companies are involved to produce some of the impetus. They're the same in every other part of the infrastructure program, and it's part of the reason why the infrastructure program is a counter-cyclical program, not just because it gives us the ports, the railways, the power stations we need, but also because it becomes a tool of industrial development. So that's how I would respond at this point.
Thank you, Minister DG. No. Are there any other comments, questions, Honourable James?
Thank you, Minister. I wouldn't fixate so much on the phrase like much. Let me say that the test of what you do is whether we get growth in this economy and you create jobs. That's the test. And you made a choice to pursue it by through a supporting industrialization. So that's the policy choice that was made. You can do it without specifically steering the economy, which is a phrase that you use, by directing a process of industrialization. So the test in the end is whether we see growth going, we can get good growth going, and they have jobs created. And on that score, the evidence is not good, and certainly not in your favor. Let me just spell out what you mean by what our approach would be. Because we do not disagree that you need some industrial policy in the country. And this is what we mean. That industrial policy interventions, we believe, need to be based on incentives, and they need to target activities, such as new technology, a particular kind or regime of training, a new good or new service, rather than sectors. They need to target activities rather than sectors. Secondly, we believe that makes sense that these are temporary in nature, so that they are exit strategies with regularly published status of updates of support in that area. Thirdly, that sector intervention should tackle a market failure through incentives, the incentives that we use for business, and should not promote state involvement right through the sales process, for example. And you will recall what happened to Mzansi stores and to the dual car in this respect. And finally, all interventions should come with comprehensive costings. You don't get comprehensive costings around us. And a final thing, I must mention, and I agree that the IFAB document produced in this phase is far superior than anything we've seen before. In terms of layout, easy to read, and you have some sense of what the progress has been over the last 5 years. Also, that there's a recognition that transversal project management is a desirable thing. Whether that can be executed is another question, because this government is notorious for not being able to successfully execute transversal projects. And that for the future, what would be very good is to have a proper matrix where we can assess on an annual basis how much money has gone into IHAP and how much has come out of it in terms of the delivery of this project in relation to the set objectives.
Minister?
Well, I think that most of the principles that he's enunciated are either already built into the IFAB or I think are fairly debatable. Let me just say that on the dual car, there was never any decision that we were going to invest in the marketing of the dual car. I think you may know that. There's an electric vehicle policy which is much more generic that we still have to launch. Then on the, I think that what we are trying to say, perhaps more generally than he's trying to say, is we are trying to support innovation, investment, competitiveness raising across the manufacturing sector and create the conditions under which that will be rewarded in this economy. That's what we're trying to do. And it'll also be rewarded in terms of market access. That's what we're trying to do. Now, I think that the point about market failures, I would just want to say we need to look very carefully at what industries around operate according to there is a temporary need for some intervention, and then there is a, this is the way the world is. And I would suggest that the automotive industry is one, where unless you have a fairly long-term automotive program, you're not going to be credible. It's not just a question of, for the moment, we need to support automotive investments because 5 years down the line, there will be no need for an automotive program. Because actually, we are competing with a number of jurisdictions for automotive investments, where precisely their programs are more attractive in terms of offering higher tariffs and offering higher levels of support than we do in South Africa. So we're trying to calibrate our programs so we are relatively competitive, but also that we are able to get more bang for our buck. That's what we're trying to do. Then there are cases, and I said this is cyclical. This is what MSEP is about. Maybe as the industrial economy picks up, and we find many more industrialists investing of their own accord. I'm talking about more local industrialists because we see a 53 billion pipeline of foreign direct investments. We see a number of industrialists who come in, but nonetheless, they want to see what the tax incentive looks like. They want to compare us to some other jurisdiction in one of these investments. You've got to be competitive in that regard. But I would say that probably if the cycle turns, but there's no sign that the cycle is turning anytime soon, then there is a case for reviewing the level of support that we provide. I think that we try to identify as many levers, outputs that we can to indicate where we've made achievements. I mean, it is the levels of investment, the levels of job creation that have been supported in the different subsectors that are the basis of us making our assessment I made just now. I think we have shown that where we have a well-targeted set of programs in place, those sectors have performed better than they did before, but against a background which is the worst global economic crisis at any time since the Second World War. Let me add to that, a time when not only are we facing industrialization taking place in the developing world, but many parts of the developed world. It was mentioned before, the DG mentioned it, about countries that let their manufacturing go. Well, somebody, maybe it's the Honorable Khaledi, let their manufacturing go. They all now trying to recover with highly competitive industrial programs. I think that's the ball game that we're involved in. So I think that I would want to say that's the case that we're putting forward. I see that the phrase light touch doesn't seem to command down here in the press statement. That was the phrase that was used, light touch. Light touch is not what we think we need. We think we need a more effective, a more targeted, and a higher level of industrial policy. That's what we are putting forward as our proposition. So I think it's useful that we are now in, I think, the substance of the debate and the substance of the policy alternatives instead of being around on all kinds of other peripheral issues. So this is the guts of the matter in terms of the work of this department.
Thank you, Minister. It would seem that the word light touch may well have been originated in the musical spectrum, and perhaps now a little up to touch in manufacturing. But it does seem as if you also seem to, Honourable James, does seem to feel that the light touch may not have been. the other day as well. But I think, and I'm sure this is exactly what was meant, it was more the smart touch. But I think, Minister, just to add that one of the issues that has come up to the committee before, the different ways, has been, which Honourable Fadeli raised, some of them, the countries, including the states, where one reads that the manufacturing is moving steadily ahead, but yet it's going to take several years before jobs fully kick in as intended because of the lag or lead time involved thereof. And that was quite interesting. But what we would find helpful, which you yourself, I think the DDG, the DG, and your husband have pointed out, that you are experiencing difficulties in aligning industrialization with developments in Europe and the new trade policies that may be required thereof. And I think that we all do, together, the committee and yourselves, just to monitor that, because as you say, it is industrialization that informs trade per se. And that was the one. The other thing, which I know Honourable Fadeli, if he had been with us, but he's just had another engagement, is the emphasis on the maritime, which he raised. We've tried to really emphasize that it would appear as if countries such as Indonesia and the like begin to see, I don't know what the technical term is, but rather than building these larger vessels to service the coastal areas, as it were, the African coast and so on, they may be, producing or manufacturing what I can't call the kind of Corvette style of vessel to do this delivery, because we do have a transportation challenge in the region, and that surely is directly related to the goods and the trade for thereof. So we would like to see the department exploring the, through ICAPSHOP, we say, that transport maritime initiative that has been, yes, Minister. And then certainly from myself, that's my final comment, Minister.
Thank you very much. I forgot that. Let me just add that. I think, first of all, there's what's called the cabotage trade, which is sort of trade Durban to Cape Town, something like that, inland, and that there's a sense that we ought to be having shipping lines and stuff like that. That doesn't fall under us directly, but I know that there's a lot of discussion around that. On boat building and shipbuilding, we have boat building, but there was actually an agreement that was signed between a Chinese company and a company in Richard Bay during the BRICS, which could potentially lead into the building of ships for this kind of small ships. And I think that is an important development, and if that looks viable, that's like a real proposition. I think we will move on that one. But of course, as you saw in the IPAP, boat building, leisure boat building, and then also building, for police boats and whatever it is off that, I think those are all areas where we see that there are some very, very significant possibilities. I've raised myself because, it is actually my hobbies, and I know that if you buy a boat in South Africa, more than half the cost is the engine. So that, you buy a regular boat and an engine, and the engine is more than half the cost. And we need to think about that side of it as well, because we import the whole thing, absolutely, the whole tooth of a boat engine is imported. So far I haven't. Yeah, so I've been raising that as a team, see what we can do to try and get some of that manufacturing here as well, because we import and we've seen a lot of imported boat engines.
So he's not
blowing
that one. We want to thank Minister DG, EG, EG, our senior people from this department for being here with us, and we hope that we all share some information and experience together for the benefit of improving this area of industrialization and, of course, the department's strategic plan and performance. But just to the committee, I would like to point out, I'm looking at a slight revision in the program, not on the date so much, a little issue. I've asked for it to be handed out. Tomorrow, of course, you know you are here, where we would get the response. response from DCI on the submissions received on the BBBB. And we have handed out huge, something, a package that big of all the submissions. And we know that you have been studying them over the weekend. And then the other thing is resting on the SEC, which I think is that same date or go forward to the 26th of April? It's the 26th of April, and that is a Friday. And then the engagement with Billiton, which will close off for the moment, that whole value add, beneficiation, admin price,